This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Closer, the podcast focused on discussing design's role in tackling complex societal issues. Our goal is to have conversations that inspire and help move the dial forward for organizations to become more human-centered in their approach to solving complex business and societal problems. In this episode, I speak with Moody Mahmoudi of Next, a business centered around helping organizations create frameworks for design and innovation within their business. And we speak about the automation of the role of the design and innovator and what this looks like. And I challenge Moody about the risks associated with this. I mean, is this something that we strive for, folks? Moody explains that this isn't the intention, but it's removing the mundane elements and creating experiences that enable designers and innovators to focus more on the craft of their doing and their work. So we speak about the hyper-addiction of organizations striving for more growth, and if this is the driver behind Next business model. We cover off the frameworks inside the Next system that allows others to tap into it. So Frameworks of Circular Economy by Ellen MacArthur Foundation, stuff there from the Design Council, and also the new This Is Service Design Doing framework by my colleagues Mark, Marcus and Adam and Jakob at thisisdoing.com. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation and I hope you do too. It's a biggie. Let's jump straight into it. Moody, it's great to have you on the podcast. I'm delighted to have you here. Maybe for our listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from and what you do.
Jerry, thanks so much for having me. So I'm Moody Mahmoudi, the co-founder and CEO of Next. Originally born in Tehran, Iran. I'm originally Iranian, grew up in France, lived in Canada, Singapore, the US, and now in France.
The south of France as well, yeah. To be specific, it sounds like you're struggling in the south of France with the beautiful weather at the moment.
On and off, right? November is a period of rain sometimes, but you know, in the fall, it's a period of transition. So you have amazing light during the day and during night, but you know, we also have moments of rain and clouds. So it's not the south of France of July and August that everybody imagines, you know, in their heads.
I know, yeah. It's in my mind, it's like, you know, beach and, you know, sun and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure it's the typical stereotype that probably south of France people kind of are always challenging. Like, no, it's not like that at all.
No, and actually we live in a part of south of France which is very artistic. So we have the Mac Foundation next door where, you know, Miro and Picasso and all these guys used to hang out.
Oh,
and they would
wow.
come here. So it's really cool to have all of that artwork around here. We have the Matisse Church, which is not far. I mean, amazing inspiration down here for anybody who is interested in this kind of stuff.
And look, speaking of inspiration, like, you know, we've been speaking for a while now about, you know, the business that you're running called Next. And it's an inspiring kind of story that you've got on what you kind of do. Let's talk a little bit more around where it came from. Like, what problem does this solve? And maybe tell us a little bit more around the lead up to starting the business as well.
Absolutely. Jerry, so we started Next a couple of years ago with an ambition of essentially helping companies create propositions and offerings that their users love. Initially, the focus was around automating the function of design. Business design, more specifically, about, you know, really building user-centric propositions. And over the years, we have morphed into more of an all-in-one growth platform that customers use essentially to scout, research, and experiment new propositions, product, services, offerings, whatever they may be working on. And the real background of this, Jerry, came from an amazing conversation I had a couple of years ago with one of the co-founders of Siebel Systems. Who told me, Moody, when they started, Siebel System created the first CRM system in the world. And their thinking was, hey, sales is an art. You know, I remember when I was a child, my father would tell me good salesmen are artists because they would close deals. Nobody knew what they had done. And design and innovation was a little bit of the same in companies when we started looking into this. It was a lot of voodoo and magic going on. Some people are creative, some aren't. And I'm like, are you serious? Why? When there is real science behind this. So the thinking for us was, if every function in an enterprise over the past 40 years has gone from being chaotic and, you know, and voodoo and all over the place to being organized into a best practice and automated by software, why not design and growth? Why can't we organize design and growth into a best practice and then automated by software so that essentially it can be replicable and scalable at, you know, at numbers that are unimagined until today. And so that was the thinking for us for creating the company. It was, how can we really use technology to make design and growth more accessible to a lot of people?
I know there's going to be listeners here now who are listening to this kind of going, automating the design and innovation process. And they'll probably have to go and lie down, okay? Because that is something that is quite intrinsic to lots of the listeners here and kind of going, this is sacred stuff, and we are humans at the end of the day, researching humans. Is it ever going to be possible for a system to allow us to be able to do that effectively? What do you say to those people who, like myself, I'm asking the question, who think that, like, okay, in order to truly understand the problem is a human thing, and how do you approach that from next perspective?
Absolutely. It's a great question, Jerry. One of the things that, you know, I'll get concrete about, you know, what we do in the product and how it works. One of the things that we think about when we build technology is not to replace humans. It's essentially to help assist and support human in their work of trying to uncover, for example, unmet customer needs in the case of research that you're talking about. So for example, if you're researching, imagine that, you know, in a normal product owner may run 5, 10, 15 interviews, may do some market research. Where does the data go? I mean, the data is typically sitting on post-its like this, in notepads, in my head. I mean, it's all over the place. You know, what mechanics do we have to analyze that data? I mean, people use highlighters, right? I don't remember if you remember when we were in university, we used to use highlighters when we prepared for exam, and then we would write in the gutter why this is important. Yeah. Where Next automates all of that digitally, meaning you can bring all of your 15 interviews in the single place. You can highlight the stuff directly in Next, tag them, and then emerge trends across those 15 interviews based on what you have tagged and what is important. That is what we're focused on. We're focused on playing that supporting role that helps you focus on that human analysis that technology cannot replace. But for everything else, you've got Next.
So how does it do that? Because, you know, there's some good text out there around the bias that persists in the algorithms that surface these problems. And from a privileged white man perspective, I'd have a real problem with that if I was inheriting these insights that were being derived from a technology. I'd want to understand how the algorithms are being co-created to making sure that they're inclusive.
So no algorithms, no funky business going on. I'm talking, Jerry, about, you know, very simple tagging. Meaning if I pick a piece of text and I tag it legroom, you know, if I'm exploring, for example, flight seats. And then, you know, in five other interviews, I also find legroom. When I search for legroom, I find all of that evidence back, right?
Okay.
So there's no magic, right? I'm not talking about magic here. It's really, think of it as a utility and a productivity tool for teams to get organized themselves. No built-in robots and maybe
so it's automated to a point. The control and the power is still being retained by the practitioner.
Absolutely.
Okay, right. Now we're on the same page.
And the way I think about it, Jerry, honestly, is what is it that we can take away from the practitioner so that they can actually spend time applying their smartness? Because how much of a project manager or designer, how much of a designer's time goes into project management? I think that's one of the biggest complaints I hear from designers is that I spend 30, 40, 50% of my time managing a project. Well, okay, let us manage the project. All this really mundane stuff that you need to do, keep your data together, things organized, teams collaborative, all this kind of stuff. Let us do all of that so that you can focus your time about analyzing what you're finding, thinking about, you know, challenging your findings, etc., which is very important.
So it's more of a zoomed out perspective in terms of how you think about design and innovation, because there are tools out there, that digital tools as well, that I'm referring to, that allows you to synthesize and sort of create a repository for your research, your data sets, and allow you to do your tagging. This is something that would sit with you from research all the way through till service delivery. Is that correct?
Yeah, we think about it all. You know, that's why I was saying, for me, it starts at scouting. Then it goes into research, and then it goes into the experimentation part. And for me, all of that is part of what allows companies to grow. And you will find the same patterns, Jerry, of you know, of practice across those functions. Meaning, when you're scouting something, you don't scout internally; you always scout externally. So that means that you are absorbing information that you need to analyze, prioritize, and then create conclusions from, diverging, convergent. When you're doing research, it's exactly the same. Experimentation. I mean, growth hackers talk about this all the time. You know, growth hacking is all about putting out, you know, creating ideas, prototyping them, putting them in the market, seeing what happens, and then absorbing learnings, right? That learnings need to be analyzed, need to be brought together, and then you know, follow-up steps need to be created.
Small experiments.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's what we're all about.
Okay. So let's talk about what it looks like. Okay. So say some of your clients at the moment, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but a lot of businesses out there are quite dysfunctional. This is going to be a light bulb moment. There's lots of stuff and complexity going on within organizations. Lots of designers who've got, you know, misshaped heads from banging their heads against the wall for, you know, decades. They see this online, okay? And they kind of go, this looks interesting. How do you, and what does it look like from their perspective? How do you help them? And what does it look like in terms of how they get started?
Sure. So essentially, you know, we have, Jerry, over the past couple of months since essentially the pandemic happened, and we realized that the adoption of digital tools is widening very rapidly in companies. Mm-hmm. We've been doing two things in order to essentially help teams get their hands on Next and get going faster. First was a shift towards being a more product-led freemium offering for the product. Traditionally, Next has been a sales-led enterprise play. Our clients are Bosch, BASF, Deloitte, big companies, big organizations with lots of people who we would sell into and then support them in order to bring design, innovation, and growth into their business. But over the past months, we realized that individual product owners can also benefit from Next. So why not allow them to do that? So we're introducing a freemium offering in the market actually this week that people can go on our website and sign up for. They can use Next for free forever. As long as they want. And then the other thing that we've done, Jerry, is team up with some of the absolute thought leaders in growth in order to bring their frameworks in Next in the form of what we call community templates. They include organizations like This Is Service Design Doing, the book.
Ah, okay, right. Which is Mark connected us, which is great. So what does that look like? So some people might have the references of a mural or a Miro in terms of being able to pull in canvases. What does that look like? Is it something similar?
We're not a collaborative whiteboard. But, you know, Miro and Mural are both great friends of ours. They actually are integration partners of our software. We think of Next as the analytics part of that process, right? So you do an assumption mapping exercise on Miro.
Yeah.
Where does their data reside, right?
On Miro.
It's sitting on Miro, right? But then you want to connect that data to an experiment that you're going to run in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
How does that happen, right? That's where we come in, right? So essentially, while Miro manages the collaborative experience, where you create stuff together, et cetera, then you can bring that data back into Next and say, okay, now I have my data. I can classify them by desirability, viability, feasibility, by risk level, by whatever. And then you can start saying, okay, in order to validate these assumptions or negate them, I'm going to run a bunch of experiments. You can connect these to the experiments. You can then run the experiments, negate and validate stuff. It essentially, think of it as the database that sits behind these moments of collaboration that you need across the process. Jerry, I always say, design is not a bunch of workshops. So there you go.
I know.
Right. So there we are focused really on that process of design, where the data is, how are you collaborating? What are you doing? How do you connect all of your data up? And how do you build a system of evidence for everything that you're developing rather than moments of collaboration?
So there is, like, you know, the whole thinking of design is definitely not just a workshop or a bloody design sprint or anything of the sort. It goes beyond that and it permeates the culture and the behaviors of everyone within the organization. Yeah. How do you work with the other people in the organization? Because is access to this just for the design and innovators, or how does it work with people who are, say, in the call centers, and how does it work at a system scale within the organization?
I mean, there's two essentially dimensions that we think about for Jerry on this one. The first one is that one of the ambitions of combining frameworks for growth and design with technology is to make those frameworks more accessible. So that's step number one. How can we put these frameworks in the hands of more people who can actually do productive work with them? Right? So that's one. And the second part is, now that you have your data in a single place, you can actually open this up to people. Imagine that I run 3, 4, or 5 interviews as a product owner, and I find really amazing stuff. How awesome is it to share this with the VP of my business unit and say, hey, you remember for the past 6 months, we've been talking about this other thing? It seems that it's completely wrong, because this is what actually people are saying. And I'm actually pointing to real facts. I'm not making a presentation where I am diluting the message with my opinion on a slide. No, the VP can come in and they can read exactly, or even watch in a bookmarked video, what that person that I interviewed said. It's amazing. Okay. You're really putting the data at the fingertips of your decision makers and your stakeholders in order to be able to make the right decisions in a customer-centric, human-centric way.
Okay. When we were speaking before, we were talking about the whole kind of 10X world of services and the service economy, and how it's exploding at the moment. Walk me through around what that looks like with businesses who are using. Like, talk to me some of the success stories from customers who are using Next and what they got out of it.
Absolutely. Jerry, I think the 10X thing is a fascinating one. And maybe I put that in context, because I'm sure some of your listeners are saying, 10X? What are you guys talking about?
I know,
Yeah? So, you know, I think, Jerry, the example we talked about a couple of minutes ago was toothbrushes. I think everybody who's probably listening on this podcast brushes their teeth morning and evening, right? So an electric toothbrush, which is now more and more of us use, if you go to the New York Times list of recommended electric toothbrushes, the average electric toothbrush costs between $30 to $50. Then you have companies like Oral-B, IO, or Sonicare by Philips, who have essentially wrapped that same product, the electric toothbrush with the rotating head and the whole thing, into a bunch of digital services. For example, that measure how hard you're brushing, how often you brush, which direction, or what parts of your mouth are you brushing. And suddenly a Sonicare or Oral-B.io cost $300. $30? $300. 10X. And the difference between those two is not the product. The actual physical product is pretty much the same, right? Maybe a little bit of a different shinier design or whatever, but not worth 10X value. It's the services.
No.
And so this idea that services are creating this value for end users is a real thing. I mean, that's where the 10X example that we were chatting about came from. And you would notice in recent reports also, you see that essentially how service economy is literally exploding, right? Services are becoming a bigger part of national economies. Increasingly, corporations are investing heavily in it. I don't know how many on this call could identify a digital transformation team in their company. Digital transformation teams don't create physical products. They create digital services. That's what they are doing, right? And so essentially, companies are really focused on saying, hey, regardless of what it is our business is, are we traditionally a service company, or no, we're a physical goods company? How can we build services to augment the value proposition of our services and our offerings to customers?
There's definitely going to be listeners listening to this. And I'm uneasy, I'll be honest with you, when I hear this kind of stuff, because even though I know growth is absolutely critical for businesses to grow and obviously to appeal to their shareholders and so forth, there's definitely a part of me that kind of sort of repels from this kind of conversation when it comes to the capitalistic mindset of just saying, okay, grow, get bigger, get faster, you know, but what's the impact of this on life? Okay, because, you know, if every business in the world was to kind of go grow by 10X, it's not, an infinite resource pool that they're going to be running from. That's the bit that I challenge on this, in terms of Are we enabling that type of mindset to permeate the cultures of organizations to just think all about growth and get bigger and fatter and slower and sloppier and sluggish? Is that what we're talking about here?
Jerry, I love the question. Thank you so much for opening up this opportunity. Not something that I had planned to talk about, but the way we think of growth, Jerry, in our company is not just necessarily in terms of money. I think companies can grow in many different ways. They can grow in the way they impact society. Organizations who are trying to create equal pay, equal opportunity, you know, build companies that reflect the society they live in. You can grow in openness and inclusiveness. You can grow in sustainability and circularity, right? The way the impact you live on the planet, right? And, you know, besides us saying, hey, this is how we feel, we actually are eating our own dog food. Let me give you a very concrete example. The examples that we talked about, us teaming up with This Is Service Design, doing around service design automation. We are doing very similar work with organizations like Ellen MacArthur Foundation. Ellen MacArthur Foundation teamed up with IDEO to create what they call the Circular Design Guide, which is essentially a playbook, a template of how companies can do circular projects. It starts from identifying opportunities, researching the problem, and then experimenting with potential products that they can bring into the market. May those be new products or applications of circularity to their existing products. So what we've also done is taken those frameworks and automated them in Next. We actually have templates in Next that you can use today to do circular design opportunity mapping, circular design end-to-end projects. All of that, I will put Jerry under the envelope of growth, because companies don't have to grow in a monolithic way. And that monolithic way doesn't have to be money. You can grow in the way you impact the society around you. You can grow in the way you impact the planet through circularity and sustainability. You can, of course, grow your business by rethinking the value you're creating for your customers. Some of these, Jerry, may translate into monetary consequences. So growth for me isn't to make money. You create growth by creating value for your customers. In return, they're willing to give you maybe more money. The same goes for circularity. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there who are saying, hey, we create sustainable products and they're more expensive. That's fantastic, right? So growth for me doesn't equate capitalistic, money-hungry, gas-guzzling.
So there's many facets to growth, is what I'm hearing. Like the facets to growth. Most of the time, people just assume more customers, more money, you know, more profit. You know, is that variable? Can they define, or do you help them define the elements of growth that they're going to go after? Is that something that you work with them on within Next? Is that something, or do you just say it's an open framework or a playbook, so to speak?
I mean, it's not open because we have very specific templates, right? So the templates that we have built with Ellen MacArthur Foundation is separate from the service design template, which is separate from, assumption mapping template, right? These frameworks are automated within the template. So customers come and choose which template they want to use. Mm. And some of them create their own templates because some of them say, hey, I actually have a growth
this is the way we do it.
Strategy, which is separate from any of these things, right? So you can choose these templates, but I think what really is interesting, Jerry, and what you're pointing out is that very often what type of growth you choose to focus on is a result of your strategy, right? Which is essentially then supported not by us, but by strategic consulting companies or, you know, internal strategy teams that say, hey, we want to focus on this and this and this. And that's how then they get to decide which direction they're going to go down.
All right. Very good. So in terms of, you mentioned at the start there that there was lots of big businesses, like some huge businesses like Bosch and Deloitte and stuff. We're using the platform at the moment. What does it look like in terms of, say, an independent consultant who goes in to consult with clients who say local councils or governments, and they want to start them off on this journey? Is it something that you have to embed into the organization, get the organizations to buy or permission? What does that look like from an independent consultant's perspective?
Great question, Jerry. So it's actually, we really thinking about this bottom up, meaning actually tomorrow, you know, if there's any independent consultants who are listening to this podcast, they can actually go sign up and start using Next for their own, in supporting a project for a client. And then if that's, you know, if the clients found that there's a lot of value in this and that they love the data and the intelligence and the evidence that has been built into there, they can then pass it on to the client. So we really think of this as in a very flexible way for people to have essentially a ramp, an increasing ramp of how you adopt Next into your company that is very easy to start with and essentially can go all the way to include the most sophisticated security and data residency and access right controls and all these kinds of things that a lot of the large corporates do expect at some point on.
There's definitely, there's something in this that I'm really attracted to. I won't lie to you. Like this sits me kind of going, part of me was kind of like initially kind of resistant, but then I'm like, it is actually really cool to be able to, I don't like the term playbook, but it is kind of something along those lines that organizations, as they grow, they change how they innovate and they change how they, how the processes change. So those templates that you have in there at the moment, can they adopt them and morph them for to make it fit for purpose for themselves?
Absolutely, Jerry. The template, one of the conditions that we've had until today with one of the with our template marketplace, and maybe I should back up 1 second here. There are two types of templates in our marketplace.
Okay.
There is proprietary templates, which our clients can create for their own, and then they use it because they think it's a strategic differentiator of their business. Or you have community templates. The community templates, we have had one condition for anybody who wants to join us, that you have to essentially open source it, right?
Okay.
Meaning that you put it out there, you allow people to use it in whatever shape or form that they want, and you allow them to take inspiration from your template and then morph it and tweak it into the way that, for example, would fit their organization. Circularity is a beautiful example, Jerry. Circularity for every company in the world means different things. They need different ways to integrate circularity into their organization. And companies need to have that flexibility to do so. So very often what happens is that clients come, they click the circularity template, they go through it, and then they say, ah, this is okay, but this not, this not, this not, this not. And maybe they adopt 75% of the circular design guide, but then the last 25% is tweaked to fit their internal processes, their internal decision-making flows, their internal stakeholder maps, and so on. So absolutely, we offer that full flexibility so people can make the best of these templates as they run their project.
Moody, it's really interesting, and I've really enjoyed speaking with you today. I'll throw a link to the nextapp.com within the show notes. But is there anything else you wanted to cover off before we wrap up the conversation?
I mean, the only thing that, Jerry, I wanted to maybe just underline here is, you know, the awareness that we as individuals, and we started with product managers, product owners, product teams, service designers, et cetera.
Yeah.
The impact that we can have on the world cannot be underestimated. I really appreciate, Jerry, you giving me the opportunity to come on the show and share not only about how we can create more service designers, but how can we actually package the service design skill set or design skill set in more broadly terms and deliver it to people who will not think of themselves as a service designer?
Yeah, and that's something that we speak about. Go ahead. Sorry, I cut across you.
I was just going to say, Jerry, this is why we as a company wake up every single morning, is to expand that skill set in the world and hopefully help people remove friction for the world, create a world in which people are happier, create a planet that is more sustainable. That's really what matters. And I really encourage everybody on the call, may you be an expert practitioner or not, to give it a shot because you can.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to check it out and sign up. Maybe there's something there that we can do with This Is HCD, but we'll chat about that offline. Moody, thank you so much for your time and sharing your story with us. It's a really exciting time for you. And, you know, you've got friends here at This Is HCD, hopefully. And if anyone wants to give feedback, both critically or in otherwise, I'll put a link to Moody's profile on LinkedIn, if that's okay with you. And they can contact you and ask you any questions that they want themselves.
Absolutely. It's an open door over here.
All right. Great stuff. Moody, take care.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Take care and talk soon.
So there you have it. That's all for this episode of Bringing Design Closer. If you like this episode, feel free to visit thisishcd.com, where you can access our back catalogue of over 100 episodes, with episodes related to service design, product management, design research, and much, much more. If you're interested in design and innovation training, feel free to check out our business, thisisdoing.com, where you can join online classrooms and learn from the world's best design and innovation leaders. Join the This Is HCD newsletter, where you'll receive updates from the network. And also, if you're interested, apply to join the Slack community on thisishcd.com. Stay safe, and until next time, take care.